listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Hi, my name is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome to our last episode in 2017. I wanted to wrap up the year by talking about Russia. No, not the Russia investigation, but Russia-U.S. relations in general, as well as in cooperation fighting radical Islamic terrorism. Russia, in particular, their second largest city, St. Petersburg, has experienced two terrorist attacks this year, and Russian President Vladimir Putin is making this a big part of his campaign for a fourth term. I discussed this with retired Major General James A. Marks, who was a senior intelligence officer during Operation Iraqi Freedom, and now now consults on national security matters with a variety of different agencies and companies. He's also a military and national security and intelligence contributor for CNN. But before we get to that conversation, first, a word from our sponsors.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And we're back. Without further ado, here's my conversation with former Major General James A. Marks. General Marks, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today. I think when we think of the war on terror, we don't really, as Americans, we don't think so much about Russia. But Russia has had their own issues and have had their own war on terror, haven't they?
Oh, goodness. Absolutely. I mean, it can be chronicled over the course of at least these last couple of decades since the fall of the wall and then the collapse of the Soviet Union in the early 90s. Russia has had a number of challenges, not just in what is defined now as the borders of Russia, but what used to be part of the Soviet Empire, which has now collapsed. In the Mideast, there have been a number of terrorist activities that Russia has had to contend with, and they've been, frankly, very brutal, very focused, and in many cases, what I would say, non-negotiable in terms of their approach toward identifying, hammering out solutions, and quickly eradicating terrorist challenges. I'm not advocating that as a strategy,
right?
But it is certainly one that we have seen in some very specific details over the years. So yes, Russia's had some legitimate concerns.
Yeah, President Putin recently called for after the St. Petersburg explosion for the liquidation of terrorists. I'm assuming that means kill on spot.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And take no prisoners. Yeah, so it doesn't seem like they've had as much concern about due process as we do here in the United States, at least for terrorist attacks that happen on our own soil, which fortunately doesn't seem like it's quite as often as what Russia's had to experience.
But you know what's really interesting, if I can comment just very briefly, is
sure. That
clearly there are issues that transcend, or let me take a step back. You know, when you look at our challenges with terrorism, we tend to paint our issues of terrorism with the same brush as, and legitimately over the course of the last 16, 17, 20 years, connected to the radicalization of the religion of Islam.
Right.
And that's very, very true. I mean, that's very true. But an atheist nation like Russia can experience terrorist activities as well.
Yeah.
In other words, our challenge is this confluence and conflict between Christianity, Judeo-Christian values, and other forms of religion, specifically the Islamic religion. But in Russia, an atheist nation like that can have problems as well, because there are legitimate concerns with how Russia itself, how its governance policies mm-hmm. approach different views. And so then all of a sudden you have an immediate flare up of challenges. And that's why when you don't necessarily have government based on laws, you know, our legal traditions in the United States differentiate us from everybody else in the world. And I underline that multiple times. We are different because of that. And God bless us for that. Mm-hmm. You have challenges in Russia that are handled much more differently than we would. And your point about due process is simply one of those aspects that we see on a daily basis. Here in the United States, we're cognizant of it. Places like Russia, they just simply
not so much.
Not so much. You got it.
Yeah, and well, also, you know, term limits too. I mean, he's going to be up for his fourth term, which it's like, wow.
Oh yeah, and hey, just rewrite the rules.
Right, right.
Yeah, let's just keep rolling this thing down the road, man. I can rewrite the rules.
So he recently thanked the United States, and specifically President Trump, and thanked him for the CIA tip.
How about that?
For a potential ISIS plot. Is that a shift in our dealings with Russia? Because what's your take on us sharing intelligence with Russia?
Yeah, that's a really good point to make. Look, I spent my life as an intelligence officer serving in all over the globe, over the horizon, in some very odd and challenged places. I served with, and we had working with us in our, what we call in the military, our chain of command within our organizational structure, a Russian organization, a Russian brigade when we were in the Balkans. I was down there for a couple of years. So we shared intelligence with the Russians. I mean, we do that. I mean, the United States does that with with partners, and it's very, very limited, and it's very controlled, and it's prescribed in terms of what you can do and you can't do. So the fact that we, quote, share, close quote, intelligence with other nations, and specifically in this case Russia, is not surprising. What is surprising is that the discussion is like, this is something that's entirely new. Now, I get that, mm-hmm. because it's not part of the daily lexicon that other folks kind of think about. But what we have to be very, very conscious of is that Russia and China and the United States are the three major powers. Clearly, the lone superpower is the United States. But China is emerging and has emerged economically. They keep buying our debt. So they have leverage on us big
yes.
time. Russia doesn't follow any rules. They are... China's a nuclear power. Russia's a nuclear power. There are a handful of other nuclear powers out there. So Russia is a constant concern for the United States as well, and has, as we all know, defined our national security strategy for decades and decades and decades, and we're now trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. So the issue remains that the United States has to be able to figure out ways to cooperate, not just default to competition with nations like Russia. So there are ways that we can do this, and this is an example where this could be a very narrowly defined opportunity for the United States and Russia to begin to cooperate in ways that doesn't put the United States intelligence collection apparatus at risk, mm-hmm. and in fact might provide value both the United States in terms of furthering some relationships, and also Russia. So there certainly has to be a quid pro quo. They've got to get something for it. We've got to get something for it. It's like any other relationship in life. So this is okay in my mind if it's done appropriately, and we approach it, we brand it, and we use it to our advantage, and we control it very strictly so it doesn't get out of, it doesn't kind of wander off the horizon a little bit, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in a situation where we are at great risk. I think that makes sense to you. So this is an opportunity.
Right.
This is an opportunity. We just got to define it very narrowly and then build those measures of trust, because at the end of the day, Russia ain't going anywhere.
Right.
China ain't going anywhere. America ain't going anywhere. You better learn to cooperate in some way and not just make this a competitive environment exclusively.
Right. Well, you know, and this may be a little bit out of your wheelhouse, but obviously with the specter of, you know, this Russia collusion investigation happening, does the United States have to be careful as far as how it approaches Russia? What should our, you know, foreign policy, is there any changes to our foreign policy, do you think needs to be made in light of the war on terror, as well as, you know, I'm thinking about also our approach to Russia as it comes, as we're dealing with the tension between them and Ukraine. Certainly this president has a different mindset than the previous administration.
Yeah, this president, absolutely. This president opened the door very vocally toward some form of cooperating with Russia. I mean, during the campaign, even you heard this president talk about, hey, if we can get along with Russia, what's wrong with that? In very glib and kind of dismissive terms. Underlying all of that, and the good thing we should really focus in on, underlying all of that is a national security approach that's been in place for decades that puts a great deal, wraps this effort at some form of cooperation, which again, I totally support, I'm an advocate for, with a great deal of caution. And we have a national security apparatus led by some incredibly mature, measured leaders in the form of our Secretary of Defense and our National Security Advisor. I mean, these are folks who I personally know, and I have professionally been honored to serve with. These are gifted men, and they understand the realities of getting this thing wrong. So we can have a president that says, which we do, hey guys, let's try to cooperate with Russia. At the same time, hey guys, we can trust, but we're going to verify as we go forward. So going forward, there are incredible opportunities. Let me give you two, and again, very short descriptions. One is, you know, Russia has been in the Mideast longer than we've been in the Mideast.
Right.
They've had a warm water port in on the coast of Syria, right there in the Mediterranean, you know, since the 50s. So they've had a presence, they've had access, and they've worked deals that allow them this type of access. This is an opportunity for us to sit down with Russia and say, look, Syria is a total mess. Mm-hmm. It defies definition, the level of brutality that's taken place. The world without Assad is probably a better place than the world with Assad, but let's try to figure out what that looks like and who his successor might be. And if he has a role in this Syria after next, then it's going to be balkanized, which means it's going to be chopped up into different little pieces, and the different competing elements and interests will end up with their own little pieces of it. I don't know that that's likely, but we can have that kind of conversation with Russia that allows us to, again, begin a level of cooperation. That, I think, is important. A second one with Russia would be in terms of access and protocols, as it's called, you know, the rules that surround the use of cyberspace. Look, there are five domains of war: space, air, sea, land, and cyberspace. Four of those have rules and regulations, and international bodies have signed off on those and says, this is what you can do and this is what you can't do. Well, nobody's done that in cyberspace yet. We should do that. And this is an opportunity to sit down with Russia and say, look, let's try to narrowly define it. And then we could go through the G7 countries, and we can get some type of an agreement and go to the G20 countries. And with G20, you now bring in Russia. And we can debate this and talk about it, and that's okay. Mm. As long as we're talking about it, we're not throwing fists across the table. That's the good thing. So I think those are two opportunities.
So in terms of cybersecurity, I mean, well, ideally, what kind of agreements would you like to see with Russia?
Well, it would be with Russia. It would really, as I described, it would be with the G7 going forward saying, look, here are some do's and don'ts, just like we've done with the international laws that govern activity on the sea. Create that for cyberspace, then take that to the G20 and start building some buy-in in terms of what this looks like and what the number one, what the do's are, what the don'ts are, what the punishments are, get the United Nations to buy in. And look, I'm cynical about the United Nations. The world is a better place with it. But I got to tell you, I often
they're not very effective.
No. And I've served in those, you know, crazy places around the globe where they've been there, and I've gone, what the heck are you guys doing? Besides, you know, wondering what's when you leave the chow hall at breakfast, you're wondering what's for lunch. You know, the first thing on their mind is you're going, my God, this is like a food feast for these dudes. I have no clue what they're getting accomplished. But having said that, the world's a better place with the United Nations because it brings the international bodies, nations together to have at least have a discourse on stuff. So there's a cost associated with that. So there are opportunities like that that say, look, these are things you can do and these are things you can't do. Look, let me put it in terms that are really quite frightening to me. If there was to be a nuclear explosion, what's called an EMP, explosive electromagnetic pulse that would occur, nuclear explosion at altitude above the southeast portion of the United States. It would blacken, let's say it blackened anywhere from Charlotte, North Carolina, through Atlanta, through Jacksonville, Florida, for example, that swath. Well, if that occurred, that would be an act of war. We would go destroy the nation that did that. Because it just would completely burn all the electromagnetic capabilities on the ground within those areas. And that's Charlotte, banking, Atlanta, commerce, travel, et cetera, and Jacksonville, arguably most of the United States Navy. So you could achieve the same effect without an EMP if you did it online, if you did it in cyberspace, and you had a very aggressive, very pointed, very robust hacking operation that could bring that down. And we would view that, I would hope, not dissimilarly from how we would view an EMP. Both of those are acts of war, but nobody sees it that way. They look at what's happening online and they go, oh, they disrupted our internet connections. They disrupted our online presence. I can't get on Facebook.
Yeah. It's true. We don't really think about how dependent we've become on the internet and how vulnerable we can be.
That's the real point, how vulnerable we can be. I mean, we get frustrated all the time. You immediately get online, you start slamming around your iPhone, or you're going, this thing isn't working, it's making me upset. And then you toss the thing to the side and you migrate back to it immediately. You know, it's a fixation, it's like a drug. So we have this vulnerability that's immense, but it's an act of war, and it's nefarious because it's not like somebody punching you in the face. It's like dying of a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you turn around and you go, I just lost access to my bank account. I just lost access to my, to what my children are up to. I thought I was in an airplane with GPS, and now GPS is gone. And I don't know, this pilot knows where the heck he's going or can land this bad boy.
Yeah.
That's an act of war.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hey, General Marks, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
This has been great. Thank you very much. It's a heck of a topic right on the eve of this new year. But I tell you, it's, you know, as you're looking into 2018, I mean, there really are some shadows that are casting kind of an ominous view toward what might be coming in 2018. But I am eternally optimistic about the leadership of our nation, the inviolability of our values, and how we approach the world. I mean, we emerge and we'll emerge strong. We're in okay spot.
Great. Well, hey, thank you so much, sir, for your time and for your service, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much. You as well. All the best.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to go to caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's caffeinatedthoughts.com, because not only do we podcast, but we blog too. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our email updates. That way you don't miss a single article or podcast episode. I'd like to wish you and yours a very happy new year, and we're looking forward to seeing you in 2018. Take care, everybody.